Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. It's Recruiting Animal. I was waiting to see if my music came on, and of course it did, and it never does. But I'm back with you again. This is going to be a little different show, maybe. I'm not 100% sure. But it's going to start off with my little talk, of course. I hope you can hear me. You know, I have a reason for saying that. One of my candidates listened to this show the other day. It was the very first time it happened that a candidate listened to my show. Usually it's something that I don't share with my regular recruiting audience. And I don't know if he was trying to kiss my ass or something, but he called me up and he said, "Hey, Animal, I think this show is really good. And I know someone in radio, and I'm going to send your show to him." So I said, "Great." And a few days later, he sent me back this message. He said, "My contact thinks you stink. He has no interest, and he says you're too loud." Now, I'm having to control myself from shouting right now. I'm just trying to tone it down a little because I hear that a lot. But the first thing I said to myself was, "Too loud? Hey, white bread, maybe you want something bland." And I say, to each his own. But you got to understand, this isn't Lawrence Welk. This is The Sopranos. Yes, this show is The Sopranos of recruiting programs. You don't come here for watered-down versions of popular tunes. You come here wondering who's going to get hit today. Now, sometimes I fail. I admit it. I can't make all my guests fun to listen to all the time. I'm just not that good. But when I'm failing, I do invite my genius listeners to call in, and, you know, I say to them, if you think I'm no good, you show me what you can do. That's the idea. You don't have to tell me who you are. Just call in and tell me what you think. But most people don't have the guts to state an opinion, and I want to tell you why, because it might hurt their brand. Now, look, Recruiting Animal is no dummy. Some people can get fired for telling the truth in public, so I don't want those guys to come on the show. But still, let me tell you again, you can go overboard with your personal brand, because sometimes a brand is nothing but an excuse to be a chicken. You got to lay low and keep your head down because you don't want to appear out of character. You know, people used to be ashamed to be so concerned about their public image. We used to call them phonies or plastic people. But really, that's the logic of a brand. You want to be known by one thing alone. So you make yourself essentially one-dimensional. You don't color outside the lines. That's the flip side of a brand. That's the flip side of being focusing your image as sharp as a diamond or whatever they want to call it. Yeah, I want you to think of some of the interviews you see on the news. Those guys are usually so repulsive. And why is that? Because they always have to stay on message. Their brands are as phony as the day is long. And it's not very attractive because your focus is also your limitation. To bring it down to earth, I go to Starbucks every morning. Everybody knows that. I see lots of moms there talking to their kids. And most of them are really nice to those kids, and I really admire them. I think, hey, they're fantastic. But you know which ones I like most? The ones who can talk to adults as well, because it's nice to specialize in more than baby talk, isn't it? That's my point. And if you don't agree, go find another podcast, because in case you didn't know, I'm the Recruiting Animal, and this is the Recruiting Animal Show!
The werewolf is neither man nor wolf, but a satanic creature with the worst qualities of both. And do you expect me to believe that a man so afflicted actually becomes a wolf under the influence of the full moon? I'm afraid, sir, that I gave up my belief in goblins, witches, personal devils, and werewolves at the age of six.
At the age of six? I used to do that routine myself sometimes when it wasn't working for a long time, so I might start to do that again. I always have the urge to say those words. At any rate, I'm back. It's the Recruiting Animal, and it's a little different today. At least I thought it was going to be. I see I have some people on the couch. Hello, everybody. But I thought I was going to really be talking to myself because I don't have a guest, and it wasn't an official panel. So who's here? Can you tell me?
Hey, this is Shally.
Hey, Shally! Michael, what happened?
You can hear me. All right.
Michael, I invited Shally to call in.
You invited Shally to call in?
I invited Shally to call in.
And actually, I think threatened is the word that she wanted to use, but she didn't.
And who's 678? Is that you, Shally?
Yeah, 678 is
okay.
Me.
Okay, there's another person there. If he or she doesn't identify themselves, I won't bug them.
Shannon Myers, how are you?
Oh, Shannon, how are you? Okay, so, you know, Shally, I was going to give a little talk right now about drugs and Gen Y. Now, if you want me to do that, I can. But since you're new to the show, and Maureen, I don't know how she got you to call in, but you tell us, do you want to talk about something? Is there something you want to fight with me about, Shally?
Not at all. I just got invited by Maureen, and she said, hey, you want to be our mystery guest today? And I said, sure.
The guest gets asked questions. I complimented you, Shally. You got a lot of compliments last week.
Well, thank you.
You didn't hear it. You don't even know who the guest was. Well, I'm going to tell you, okay?
I'm actually on your blog right now. I can see all the guests and all that. I don't know if you know this, but I got tired of trying to make my own, you know, sorcerers out of recruiters, so I decided I'm just going to make one from scratch. We're having a baby in about a week.
Oh, yeah, I thought you were going to tell me you become Frankenstein or something like that. Congratulations.
Pretty much, yeah.
Kid's going to be a Frankenstein for a while. No offense, you know, that they're really terrors. Okay, congratulations, Shally.
So I've been a little under the radar last few weeks, but
yeah, you're going to be under the radar for the next 5 years. 5 years. You're lost, man.
I told Shally his life was about to change.
Shannon, you want to congratulate Shally?
Congratulations.
Shannon, do you know who Shally is? The great Shally Steckrell?
Of course I know who Shally is.
He's the Elvis of sorcerers. Go ahead. You have something? You want to say something to Shally? Now's your chance. You'll never talk to him again.
Well, you just gave her my phone number.
Did I? Oh, well, hold on. Just the first three digits. You're all over the place anyway. In fact, somebody called me from Atlanta. They emailed me, Facebooked me, whatever. And they said, are you the recruiting animal on jobmachine.net? And I said, is there any other? So someone was trying to get in touch with you. I don't know if she did, but you're not that hard to find. Anyway, Shally, last week, Jason Alba, you know who he is?
Absolutely.
He thinks you're cool. So I asked him why he thought you were cool. He had a hard time coming up with a reason. I think he said you're friendly. Maureen, was that it?
Yeah.
Okay. You're friendly, Shally. You sound friendly today.
That's the adult equivalent of cute and fuzzy bunny.
But anyway, my point was I complimented you too because I was telling him stuff about LinkedIn that I know I learned from you. And I believe it's from you that I learned most about this three-degree issue and how important it is,
fundamental
it is. And nobody really, there's so many other career advisors who don't get that at all.
They don't get it at all. You know what's worse? If you look at the entire population, 16 million active users, 18 mm-hmm. million users total on LinkedIn,
yeah.
There's only less than 6,000 people with more than 500 contacts.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah, but see, the LinkedIn and other people won't name them on the net. They're really promoting this idea of a trusted network where really, no, essentially, you're just saying, don't anybody find me. Isn't that it?
If you got it's kind of like saying, we created this environment. We created this platform, but we don't want you to use it.
Yeah, do you know the guys at the top? I don't want to, you know, have you say anything that's going to prejudice them against you, but what's
that? Sure, yeah, we're friendly.
Yeah, but everybody agrees, even there was another guy agreed, that they don't understand the purpose of their operation there.
I think you're right about that in the sense that they're trying to control an environment that really should be a free market system,
mm-hmm.
and when you create too many artificial controls, it starts to feel a little bit like it's contrived. And I think that's sort of what's happening. What you'll see that's going to change is they're going to start to productize different segments. So, for example, there'll be a recruiter product on LinkedIn, and it'll be, you know, more focused to the recruiter's needs. Right now, it's a platform that tries to be a lot of things to a lot of people. And you know that in, you know, market segmentation, it's really difficult to be a lot of things to a lot of people. So I think what's going to happen is they're going to start focusing on some groups that they want to support and be more customized, more software for, and that's what we're going to start seeing. And there will be the difference, and there will be the advantage.
Yeah, but isn't it really, it's just a database that people can search. Isn't that really fundamentally the business? And it's a fantastic business, and they do it well as long as they don't limit it. And I'll add one other thing. Anybody can jump in. I see we got another listener now, 386. And what was I going to tell you? Yeah, Bob Merrill. Bob Merrill said that if these guys limit themselves too much, one of these other secondary networks like Tribe or Spoke or Rise, et cetera, they might just, you know, jump into that opportunity and give people a better free hand to search those networks.
Absolutely. I'll tell you, you're right about one thing. It is definitely a search engine. I think that is a very big part of what LinkedIn is a people search engine. And with 18 million users, it is starting to become significant. But there really are other
parts. Weren't there only 16 million 2 minutes ago? Maureen, what did he say?
He said 16 to 18.
Okay.
Yeah, it's 16 to 18. It depends who you're asking.
Don't,
you ask
can't put anything over on us here, okay? Go ahead.
Shally, do you think Murdoch's organization is going to buy it? That's the buzz right now.
Is that the buzz? I can see why that would be the buzz. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think that they're in a position where they'd want to sell right now. If I was them, I would hold on to it. Because of the exponential growth they're still experiencing. There's something like 250,000 new users being added every week, so that's, what, a million a month?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, why sell when you're on the way up? You want to sell when you're almost at the top.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, yeah, I wanted to say, Animal, you're absolutely right. It is a people search engine, but there is a big piece that is overlooked, and that is the piece that it's not just about me going on there to find you. It's also you going on there to find me. It's actually a two-way street. You were talking about people who are overly protective of their personal brand at the beginning of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, LinkedIn could be a way for you to really explode your personal brand. Yes, you can find people, but you can also be found. And if you go into LinkedIn and you're shy and you don't let yourself be found, forget about it. You're not using the tool to its full capacity. You need to use it as a mega business card, as a clarion call, as a mating call, whatever it is that you want to call.
I like that. Yeah.
You need to go in there. You need to yell from the top of the mountain, I am here. I am, you know, part of this world. Find me. Join me. Link to me. And if that means I only connect with certain people, fine. State your purpose. Go in there into your summary and say, I'm only going to connect with you if you fall under any one of these circumstances. That's fine. That's perfectly okay. I do that. A lot of other people do that. If you want to accept everyone's connections, that's up to you. If you only want to accept connections of people you've had dinner with or went to school with or worked with, that's fine. You can define whatever it is you want to define. But don't forget that LinkedIn is a two-way street.
Yeah, you know what? I think you just contradicted yourself by saying you should limit yourself. You shouldn't limit yourself because if it's – for me, it's really – I don't know about anybody else like other kinds of business people, but it's ideal for recruiting. And if you don't want recruiters to find you and you want to just limit yourself to your dinner club, that doesn't really make any sense unless you're not working.
Go ahead and do it. I don't care. I'm going to go in there and I'm going to connect with anybody that I want to and everybody.
Well, who
That's
do you,
the way
not,
I
who do you not link with? You said you don't link with everybody.
There's some people that I won't link with because it looks like their profiles are fake.
Oh, okay, like the Recruiting Animals profile.
No, that's not a fake profile. There are people who have artificial profiles. They have 14, 16, 20 employers, and they're all top brand employers. You know, they've worked for basically 10 of Fortune 10 companies.
Yeah.
And they're really only there to go fishing, and that's the entire purpose. And on top of that, they don't share their contacts. And they don't have any endorsements, and their names are generic, and they don't have a summary or objective or any other kind of web links or anything like that. They're basically just using the system as a one-way system, which is fine for them, but if they're not going to contribute to me, why should I share my 1.2 million contacts
with them? You mean that's the thing. Okay, I was going to ask you why they're there. So they want to have a database to search without being reached there. I don't get it.
I don't get it either, but they do it. You know what? Hey, Animal, if you don't show me yours, I'm not going to show you mine.
Okay. Now, you've got you have to approve my membership on jobmachine.net, or I'll delete this show after it's over, okay?
Approved.
Okay, and you have to also, I'm going to send you after the show an invitation to join the Recruiting Animal Show group. But what's the value of these groups anyway? I mean, it's just advertising, right?
I am very susceptible to threats and flattery.
Okay, good. Well, what's the purpose of these groups?
The group that you created or
the
one that I
groups.
Created?
No, the LinkedIn groups. Tell me what's the purpose of your group.
In a nutshell, a LinkedIn group allows you to see the other members' networks. So it's a way to expand your network reach, what they call your network reach, which is really a fancy way of saying how far into the network cloud you can see. If you think of the network as a big cloud with interconnected particles, the more connections you have, the deeper into the cloud you can reach. That's what they mean by that. So having a group, first of all, being the owner and moderator of a group means that you can invite people to join your group without necessarily having to directly invite them to link with you. So it's kind of like a second type of connection.
So even if you can connect with people through common membership in a group, even if they're beyond 3 degrees of direct connection. Is that right?
Absolutely right.
Or indirect connection. Okay.
Absolutely
yeah.
right.
So someone can be 10 degrees away from me and yet still be accessible to me via the group?
Because you're on the same group, correct.
Okay, and the JobMachine.net group must be phenomenally huge. Am I right? How many people are in it?
Close to 4,000, and they're all graduates of my training of some way or another, whether it's a webinar or on-site.
Okay, anybody else got a question for Shally? I'll give you a break because I'm having fun here. 386, you got a question for Shally?
That's Florida.
Okay, 386 is quiet. Some people like to be quiet. Shannon, do you have a question for Shally?
No, I think somebody started to speak up.
Just no question. Thank you, though, for asking.
Okay, just thought I'd give
you... Who are you in Florida?
My name is Fred Ziems. Is this Maureen?
This is Maureen, yes.
Yeah.
Nice to meet you.
Well, thank you. I use your, I think it's the last subscription for the annual recruiter's guide that you provide.
Oh, okay, the magic method?
Yes.
Oh, okay, you. Good. Do you like it?
Well, so far, so good.
Good, good.
Hey, Fred, call back next week. That's
we'll
Maureen's stop show. This is Shally. You got Shally on the show, okay?
I bought his stuff, too. Yes, I spend money with everybody. I'm
oh, good.
Guy here.
Maureen, do you have a question for Shally, or do you want to argue with
Shally?
Well,
I was looking for it. I was on LinkedIn a couple weeks ago, and I saw on their user agreement that they had a clause that said you weren't allowed to contact people outside of LinkedIn, that you found on LinkedIn.
Yep.
So I asked that question in the groups, and there were some interesting responses, but I'm looking for it right now, and I don't see it. I don't know if LinkedIn pulled it off and changed it, took it out of their user agreement or not. Do you know if that's still their current policy?
As far as I know, that has always been the policy. Well, maybe not always, but for a long time, it's been the policy that they don't want to encourage you to go into LinkedIn, find a name, and then looked up person up on the white pages and cold call them at home or cold call them at work. But, you know, they cannot control what you do with your network. So while they want to not encourage you, that doesn't mean that they're going to find ways to try to prohibit that behavior because it's really, you know, it's impossible to do that. Even if they could figure out a way somehow to obfuscate names or whatever, it would really devalue LinkedIn as a network. So all they're saying is they're saying, according to the user agreement, we'd like you not to do this, please. If you go and do it, you're technically in violation of the agreement. But then again, you know, how are they going to know that you're doing that?
Well, as Jason Alba said, the people will report you if you tell them you're calling, you know, via LinkedIn and they don't want you to call them. So you can have feedback. I've never had that happen.
If they report you and, you know, you get caught and you say, I'm sorry, I made a mistake, you know, well, you know, that's okay. It's a mistake, you know. I think it's like a speeding ticket. You know, you go speeding a little bit too fast, you get caught, you pay the fine, you move on. It's not like it's going to be one of those, you know, put you in the slammer for 25 years to life kind of offenses.
Okay, I should play Maureen's music a bit. If you come on again, Shally, I'll get you a tune as well. I should get Shannon when she comes on regularly. Same for you, Fred. You got to be a regular attendee before you get your own music. Listen, Shally, I was reading an article yesterday. I think I'm going to post it probably tomorrow. And it said that really what we can access via Google or any of the search engines is really just the tip of the iceberg in the amount of information that is really on the web. Most of it is locked into databases that are not indexed. Is that true?
Mostly true.
And so that's really it. So even a genius like you, a super sorcerer, like internet sorcerer, can't get access to that stuff either. Am I right or wrong, or is that a question I shouldn't ask?
Yeah, that is absolutely a question that you should ask. That is a question, unfortunately, many people do not ask. You know, when you are searching Google, you are not searching the internet. You are searching Google's version, their card catalog or their index, their version of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you're searching. If you were to search all of the top 5 search engines, Google, Windows Live, Yahoo, Exalead, and Ask, even if you just focused on those five, which are supposed to be the biggest ones, and in many cases they are with some exceptions, the content that you're going to be able to find, some experts agree, is going to be somewhere in the 30% of the World Wide Web. So there's 70% of the content out there that you cannot get to from a search engine. You have to have a direct URL. You have to type the address in. That doesn't mean that it's private, password protected, or behind any kind of security. It's just not being cataloged by the search engines. And every search engine company is going to tell you that they don't ever foresee a future where they're going to be able to index all the pages, because the amount of content being added by sites like LinkedIn, MySpace, and Ning, and all these other content sites far exceeds the capacity for the machines to keep up with it. So what they want to do is they want to try to focus on the areas that are active and growing. And so that's, you know, that's why they're basically going to admit defeat and say we're only going to get to about 30% of what's publicly out there. Mind you, I say publicly. Now, there's a whole other bubble of information beyond that 100% that is public. There's a whole other bubble that is what you were referring to that is password protected. You need a password or some sort of credentials to access it. Not only do you have to know the address to it, but you also have to respond to some kind of challenge, whether it's a code or a simple login, or it's dynamically generated content. That means that it's a database that will only provide you content when you ask for it, and it won't provide it to a search engine. So you have to go on the website, for example, and do a query in order to have that query come back with results.
Yeah, they mentioned that.
You'll find that with libraries.
They mentioned that specifically because, a database, each entry on a database doesn't have a URL until you actually bring it up, right?
In some cases, unless they're PHP databases or like ASPs like LinkedIn, for example, each profile is a separate entry in a database, and they have chosen to make that public. With Jigsaw, for example, they have chosen to make public only a certain category. I can't disclose which category, but only a certain category of contacts. So you can actually do an external search of their internal database from Google or Live or Yahoo and still see data. You can't see all the data, but you can see an enormous part of the data. They want that because that search engine optimization brings more traffic, which brings more customers, which brings more money to their website.
Okay, so I got a couple. I had no preparation, but I have a couple of questions just based on what you're saying. First of all, I know you always preach go to as many search engines as possible. Don't just use one search engine because they bring back different results. But still, these search engines only index about 100 lines into a website. Isn't that the case? How far do they go down?
It depends on the search engine, and it depends on the trusted content of the website. So some websites that are new and untrusted will get less deeply indexed. Some websites that have been around for a long time have had continuously updated content that revolves around a specific subject matter. Those websites are going to get a much better treatment and a much more deeper x-raying or deeper indexing by the search engine. So that 100 rule is probably, may be relevant. I can't speak to that with any level of certainty, but it may be relevant for the newer sites that haven't quite yet, quote-unquote, proven themselves to the search engine.
So why do these search engines bring back different results? Do they all decide that certain, different websites are the trusted websites they're going to index more deeply?
They have significantly different points of origin. So imagine if I started painting a map of the world, but my map of the world started in Istanbul or Constantinople or whatever, whatever you want to call it, and your map of the world started in Beijing and Maureen's map of the world started in Lima.
Okay.
As she starts to draw the map, she's going to come across different things in a different perspective from a different angle, and she's not going to be able to map every single inch of everything. She's only going to map the things that she has interest in. So as she moves along, her map of the world, it takes a different shape than mine and yours, and we see different parts of the world differently. Now, the problem with that analogy is that the world continues to expand. And, in real life, the world is actually, pretty much static. But the World Wide Web is actually continuously growing, so Maureen's map of the world is always going to be different than yours and mine.
Maureen, do you understand that?
Kind of, sort of. I wonder... Are people who post actively, does their stuff get picked up immediately?
Not because they post actively. Usually the platform is the one that dictates that.
The one they trust, Maureen.
The one they
exactly.
trust.
Yeah. And the whole point is okay. these different search engines trust different platforms. Is that right?
Correct. They they have different trust levels. The spiders or the robot, the system that actually does the cataloging and counting of all the letters and links have different behaviors and in some cases are more polite than others. So, for example, Google's crawler, their indexer, is so powerful and robust that it has to be more polite. It has to abide by stricter regulations not to overburden a server, because if it goes to a website that's hosted by a server and that server doesn't have the capacity to handle the amount of questions Google is going to ask of it, it might bring the server down, cause it to reboot, or cause it to have a permanent failure. And that would actually cost that website maybe some money or at least some downtime, things like that. So certain search engines have more polite spiders, and that causes a different set of results as well.
Okay. Now you're in our world, you're like Elvis. You're a god, right? But in the larger world, are you a somebody to these search engine guys? Do they say, let's call up Shally and see what he thinks about this?
No, they don't call me. They feel the effects of some of the scripts and automation systems that I run out there from different perspectives, but they don't know where it's coming from.
But do they know who you are?
No, absolutely not.
Okay, no, so somebody's calling somebody, but they shouldn't be doing so on this show. But listen, so you mean people in Google, they don't know Shally?
Well, I used to work there, so that's unfair.
Oh, okay, that's not what I mean. Okay, well, let's take some of those others. They don't say, okay, this is a super user, okay? That's not, you're not a super user in their world. Am I right?
No, absolutely not. I'm nobody.
Okay, that's interesting. So who is somebody to these guys? Do they have librarians that they talk to, or are they really separated from their market?
Librarians are actually seen in a very different light than you would expect. Librarians have, some of them have welcomed search engines. Others see search engines as a threat to their way of life.
Uh-huh. Oh,
so
okay.
It depends on who you're talking about. Who the search engine companies go to for expertise are people that are expert in solving mathematical algorithms for k points of n, the distance, the shortest distance between two points, basically, and how to bridge the gap in internet space, kind of like folding the time-space continuum.
Okay.
They're theoreticians and mathematicians and programmers that are able to do that. So that's who they go to. And when it comes to search engine optimization, there's a number of gurus out there, like Danny, for example, from Search Engine – well, actually, I don't think he's at Search Engine Watch anymore, but those types of gurus that are more about the general purpose of search engines.
I mean, Danny Sullivan ranks that high with them?
He ranks certainly very high. He speaks at the major conferences. And,
oh, okay.
You know, Google sends representatives and Microsoft sends representatives to these conferences to listen to what Danny has to say. But keep in mind, people like that have an audience that is the whole world, anybody that wants to sell something on the Internet, where my audience is only people that want to find other people. So I'm only talking about research, finding names, and finding people, where they're talking about products, which is a much, much bigger universe.
Fred or Shannon, anything you'd like to say at this point?
I'm just wondering when Shally sleeps, to be candid with you. I mean, you really just, I mean, you're up on everything.
Are you kissing his ass, Shannon? I mean, that's not
no,
what I asked.
No, I'm serious. I don't, you know, I try, and I'm like, how does he keep up?
Shally's not going to get any sleep. He's going to have a kid in a week.
I was just thinking that. I'm like, maybe I can catch up, you know. Maybe I can catch up while he's having a
You can overtake him, man. This is anybody's chance. You see, Shannon, you actually did have an interesting thing. This is Shally's becoming vulnerable in the next little while.
Well, actually, I'm probably going to get more sleep than I usually do.
Why is that?
Well, because I'm going to have to.
Okay.
Good luck.
Okay, good luck there.
Good
That's
luck
Fred.
With that.
Good luck. Good luck.
Well, the person who said good luck doesn't know how much sleep I'm getting now.
Well, maybe
true.
Shannon was right. You don't get any sleep. It couldn't be Shally if you got any sleep. Okay.
Some people only need a couple of hours. You know, I'm one of those people, but I sleep in cycles. I'll have a couple of days where I just goof off, and then I'll work for a couple of weeks.
Okay. I want to ask you another question before I forget. Jigsaw. I've never used it. Do you use that a lot? Is it okay if I ask you?
Yeah, sure.
I don't want to ruin your brand by telling you not to give out too many secrets.
No. I use it all the time.
So
Let me ask a question, Michael.
Go ahead. You go ahead.
Shally, Michael's always saying – he's always afraid of giving away too many secrets. Do you think you can give away too many secrets?
I don't think it's possible to give away too many secrets when you have the key to finding new ones.
Thank you.
Well,
Any
I don't
Michael?
No, no, yours is different. And Shally's got the cheat sheets, for instance, so you can go to the cheat sheets and learn specific things. If you give it away for free, people don't have to buy the cheat sheets.
But there's always new stuff.
Yes, true. Steve Finkel says the same thing, but your angle, Maureen, is different. You give it away because people don't want to do it, no matter what, how much they know, right? They could know the book, A to Z.
You mean I can lead a horse to water? Is that
That's
what you're
it,
saying?
Yeah. So Shally's different. So what did I ask you? Jigsaw. How do you use Jigsaw? Can you tell me something about it?
Well, there's actually a couple of ways you can use Jigsaw. The primary way, again, is as a search engine. Go in there, put in a name, put in a company, get some names. It's not very well documented that Jigsaw contains a lot of cell phone numbers. In fact, it's actually against their policy. They're not supposed to have cell phone numbers in Jigsaw. But you and I know that most people today, in their business card, put their cell phone numbers. So how information gets into Jigsaw is by people that gather business cards. And, of course, a cell phone number is on the business card, and they don't put on there that's their cell phone number. It just has a phone number. So
For people who don't know, Jigsaw, you trade names with them, essentially, right? You give them two, they give you one back. Is that how it works?
You give it to the system, and the system gives you points, which then you use to buy contact from somewhere else. It's basically if you remember back in the day, the Rolodex party, where everybody would bring their Rolodex, and you would swap contacts with each other.
Sounds dirty, eh?
Didn't used to be.
Okay. No, I've never been to one of those. Okay, but this is essentially the same thing.
It's a swap meet. It's a barter exchange contact.
And it works. Say, so if you go to a networking meeting, you get about, let's say, 20 or 30 cards, then you can go back without anybody's permission and put their information into Jigsaw, right?
Correct. They can remove themselves if they want to.
Yeah, but can't someone just go into LinkedIn then and also put in random names in order to get their to get the points to use Jigsaw?
You know, I'm sure people do that, but when they get caught, they lose points and they can actually lose reputation as well. They can even be locked out of the system.
How do you get caught?
Because if you put in a contact and someone comes in and says, hey, that's incorrect, the actual title is this, and they challenge it, and you can't come back with the original source, or you can't come back with a more recent response, then you get caught, basically.
What if you duplicate someone else's contact? Does the machine reject?
If it's already in the system, it's not going to give you any points. It'll just create a duplicate for it.
So you LinkedIn, is that your number one? I mean, that's my number one online resource. Is that yours?
I think it's fair to say because of the size, yeah.
Uh-huh. What's number two?
As far as a database, I would probably have to say Jigsaw because, again, the size.
Really?
And then ZoomInfo after
that. How many does Jigsaw have in it? It's
approaching 7 million, but they're clean.
Is it? They're
clean? They do a lot of cleaning. They actually pay people to clean.
What does that mean?
That means the data is up to date.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So, unlike
how
a lot of other
clean?
Databases, the data is out of date.
How do they clean? They call and check on the information?
They use lists. So, for example, you can, the person who's doing the cleaning is generating points. So you and I could become cleaners for Jigsaw.
Oh.
All we have to do is go in there and clean data.
Okay.
And if you clean data, you get points. The more points you get, the more points you can sell.
And cleaning
when you sell
data
points, you get money.
Is what? Cleaning data is correcting incorrect data.
Updating it, correcting it, creating it. There might be a company name that has no address or something like that.
What do you think about the people who worry about the privacy issues with Jigsaw?
I will tell you my stance on privacy, and then I got to go because I got another call I'm going to jump onto.
Okay.
I will tell you my stance on privacy is as follows. Privacy is a privilege and an individual responsibility. If you give up your privacy, that is your own fault. If you protect your privacy, it is your right, but not if you don't protect it. It's not something that is just automatically bestowed on you. Okay, and a lot of people forget that. A lot of people don't take it seriously, and their privacy is basically given up. And
so
they
don't
do
have
that willingly and voluntarily.
Essentially what you're saying there is don't give anyone your business card, because if you do, they'll put it onto LinkedIn.
If you're going to give away your business card, make sure that that's what you want to give away. Don't put things on your business card that you don't want made public.
Okay. Like your phone number and your name and your address, right?
That makes sense.
Well,
your title.
If that's what you want, then yeah. It wouldn't be any different to drop your business card off at a restaurant where they say drop your card here for a free lunch or whatever. People do that all the time.
Okay.
Where do you think those baskets of business cards go? They go to a local recruiter in the area that paid for the lunch.
Oh, okay.
Think about it.
Yes, sir, I will. I don't think that was a good answer, but I'll let you go. I won't argue with you about that now.
Oh, you're a bleeding heart, Michael.
I am? No, it
yes,
wasn't a good answer. He said it's your own responsibility. That means there is no privacy because you can't be secret. You can't be totally unknown, and yet somebody else can take that information and put it online. The real question, I think, is, I talk to candidates. I tell them to go on LinkedIn, and they say, oh, I don't want to put my information up there. I say, you're crazy, but they do have a point. There's newspaper articles about identity theft all the time. I don't know how it works.
Link to
right. That's what I'm saying is you need to actively protect your privacy. And speaking of identity theft, my wife is a victim of identity theft, and we're very careful with what happens with our credit card applications that come in the mail, our bills. Everything gets shredded. Everything gets destroyed. We don't leave information around. But because we have been victims to that. So, again, I'm telling you, this is not a naive view. You need to take an active role in protecting your privacy, just like you take an active role in protecting your health and your security.
Okay, so last question before you have to go, if you have to go right now. How does that affect somebody who wants to, put their profile on LinkedIn?
You can put information on LinkedIn about your professional life without revealing things that are going to lead to a violation of your privacy.
Like what?
Well, what you do, if it's not confidential, it really shouldn't be private. I mean, if you're proud of your job, why should that be private? I mean, you want people to know what it is that you do. If you're a recruiter, you definitely don't want to be private about it. What you might want to be private about are the relationships that you have, so you don't reveal those. But you certainly can reveal what it is that you do and who you do it with.
Okay, but real identity theft, they're just talking about getting, your PIN number on your bank card or your credit card number. Is that it?
Well, they can get your mother's maiden name and apply for a credit card. They can get your, pet name and your home address and do other things. I mean, there's a lot of they can create an Internet account in your name to use that account to, basically violate a bank's security system. And then, all of a sudden you get the FBI or whatever the Canadian equivalent is knocking on your door asking about some bank that you robbed when you were never even anywhere near a computer.
Okay, it's getting complicated now. Okay, I won't ask you any more questions about that. Should we let you go or should we keep talking?
I got to go. I really do have to go, but I will call back.
Thanks for calling.
Call back.
All right, guys. Take care.
Bye, Sally.
Bye-bye.
Could I offer a newbie's insight to how we use Jigsaw?
Yes,
absolutely.
Go ahead.
We,
this is Fred, right?
Yeah, this is Fred.
Fred, what's your last name again? You want to reveal that, or are you afraid of getting stolen?
No, I'm not a privacy freak here. And
is it Zane or something like that?
Z-I-E-M-S.
Okay.
Yeah. And I work for my son. That has blessings and a curse. Sanford Rose and Associates, a recruiting firm in Ohio.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I have the unfortunate part of that business being in Palm Coast, Florida. So I do some of the recruiting here, which is new to me. Therefore, my interest in Shally's work and also the magic method. But Jigsaw for us, we bought the contacts. We get a couple hundred of them. I guess I don't know what the numbers is. They're theoretically $0.50 a piece. We buy a couple hundred of them at a time. But what we find is that it's not very clean, and the numbers are all there. The problem is it's supposed to be self-cleaning. In other words, if I go find that contact, try to email him or call him or her, the number's no good, or they've moved on, or they've changed that email, whatever.
But often when you get a name, you can track the person down. Not always.
Yeah,
but
more than that, you can use it as a reference. Who's doing that job, that
mm-hmm.
sort of thing. So it's not, it's not a totally cost inefficient way of doing that. The only problem, if you challenge that, you can't just challenge it on an incorrect email, and I'm not sure that you can challenge it just on a phone number. You have to have both, I think, but don't nail me down on that. But the problem is I ain't got time to self-help with the self-cleaning part of that.
Mm-hmm.
I bought the contacts. I don't have time to sit down and go through the challenge process. For me, that is... I just don't have the time to do that. Nonetheless,
you don't have time to be a cleaner.
I don't have time to be a cleaner. I'm willing to spend the money for it, to buy the couple hundred contacts, and have found it to be fruitful.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm sure that the companies don't like Jigsaw, and I've read articles where many of them don't like that. You know, you're exposing, typically, they're going to be plant managers, a lot of the higher-level people, plant managers.
Oh, companies don't like anything like that. Of course not. Okay, but we like it.
But we like it, exactly.
But you're saying it's not efficient. But, Maureen, you often have to track people.
The only thing I'm saying is it's not efficient for me to go back in and clean it. It's efficient for me to buy the contacts and use it. But
okay, I see.
Because he can take a name that may not have the same title any longer and call and ask for that person,
yep.
Oh, that person's no longer here or that person's in a different position, and find out who held that previous title
right.
is what he's saying.
Yep.
Michael.
Yeah,
okay.
I would still use that name to get into the company.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, there's a area code 412. Do you want to say anything? Do you want to say something?
Hi, it's Tina Winter from Boyd and Interim in Pittsburgh.
Oh. Hi,
are
Tina.
You a friend of Maureen's?
No.
Okay.
Not yet.
Michael, do you think I'm filling this with the couch with my
friend? Okay. That's okay. That's okay. Tina,
good
is there
idea, though.
Something you want to say, or I just thought I'd give you a chance if there's something you'd like to say.
No, I actually came in late because I was having a little technical difficulties on my Outlook, and I couldn't access the phone number until a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's always on recruitingshow.com if you're interested in
okay,
the
future. Great.
Okay. Why did you come here? What did you want to listen to? We didn't have a guest today. Is there anything yours, or do you want to share something with us?
Sure, I would love to.
What?
I'm not sure if you're familiar with Boyden, but Boyden is a global executive.
I wasn't telling you to advertise your business, Tina. I thought if you want to share something about the business that everybody
can. Oh, here goes Michael, the needle in the wall.
I'm the host. I got to keep it interesting.
Well, I thought maybe there might be a way we could work together.
Hey, if you pay me, I'll give you an ad. I'll do the ad myself. Hey, Tina.
You can even have a song. Play my song again, Michael.
Okay, hold on a second. You know, Tina, if you come back, I'll give you a song as well.
Okay, great.
Hold on a second. You've never been on this show. You ever listened? Hold on. There you go, Maureen.
That's enough.
Wow.
Okay. So is there a topic you're interested in, Tina, or should we just move on for the time being? Now, tell us what you do. Go ahead. Don't advertise your company. Tell us about you.
Are you a recruiter?
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
How long have you been in recruiting?
Going on 3 years.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I'm almost a dinosaur.
Really?
There was just an article on ERE about dinosaurs.
Yeah.
I saw that.
Did that ring true with you?
Well, I think in this industry, it seems like people have a short shelf life, at least from company to company.
Are you a third-party recruiter or a corporate recruiter, Tina?
Well, she was trying to tell you.
Yeah, I was trying to tell you, but I'm not going to tell you now.
No, no, I'm inviting you now. You do what I tell you to on the show. You tell us who you are.
Okay, well, what I was trying to say is, even though Boyden is a global executive search firm, so third-party to answer your question, I work for a relatively new part of the business, which is Boyden Interim Management, and we're doing temporary assignments at the executive level. Director level and above. So you might have individuals that you run across that are more qualified for positions that you're recruiting for, and maybe they have golden handcuffs because they've taken a package from a large corporation, not really ready to retire, but they're looking to do something on a part-time basis, maybe work half of the year. And those are the types of candidates that I'm looking for our database.
Really? So most of your people, are they over 50?
I would
that
say...
Sounds like boomers.
Right, exactly. I would say 75% are over 50.
Really? And how do you find... this is interesting. I'm curious to ask you a lot of these questions. How do you find customers for temporary executives?
We're doing a lot of work with private equity and venture capital firms
mm-hmm.
where they may need a certain industry expertise because they've just purchased a company maybe that's outside of their sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
And we bring in somebody with that industry expertise. Maybe a turnaround situation. We have had reorganizations. And we're mainly working in, you know, say five functional areas, HR, sales and marketing, finance, operations, and supply chain. So if someone has, a supply chain initiative that they're going to work on for, you know, the first two quarters of 2008, they really don't need to hire another person and have that overhead, but they could, in fact, bring in an interim, have them work on the project, get someone brought up to speed to function at that level, and then they step out when the project's over.
Now, it sounds like they're probably handsomely paid.
Actually, it's probably about averaging about 10% more than what a permanent employee in that
only
position.
Only 10%. Huh.
Yep.
Surprised.
Now,
there are some other firms out there. I don't know if you're familiar with, like, the Tatums of the world and so forth, and their model's a lot more expensive.
Hmm.
And these are 1099 income
mm-hmm.
individuals,
mm-hmm.
so they don't go on the company's payroll.
Mm-hmm.
They're 1099 through Boyden.
Right. Listen, how do you find these guys? You join an old folks club or something like that?
We're actually doing a lot of work with networking groups, for example, ExecuNet. They'll hook us up with people that are in that space, a lot of referrals, and within our Boyden network, we have 13 offices in the U.S., so we have kind of a feeder system from our other offices.
I mean, you can't just call, let's say, an HR director or even a VP necessarily and take them out of or her out of an ongoing position
exactly.
to move into a temporary job. That's why I'm wondering, how do you really have to find these people out of people are either just about to leave a position or who aren't working right now. Is that right?
Right, and outplacement firms. We're working with the Lehecks and
yeah.
and companies like that where, you know, they do know people who have taken a package
uh-huh.
and, you know, maybe they're not quite ready to retire. They have a few good years left in them and, you know, want to stay active.
So
if they're rewarded, if they're compensated at 10% over the norm and they're 1099, I mean, it sounds like a savings to the hiring company.
Absolutely. So it's
That's
a nice selling point.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not going out doing active sourcing yourself necessarily. You're getting partners to funnel these people to you. Is that right?
I am doing sourcing, and we do have a website that's up and running where someone can register if they'd like to be considered for our database.
Mm-hmm.
But as we filter people in and they look like they have a background that would transition nicely between various industries and so forth, I'm doing qualification to put them in our database so that when we have an assignment, we've already interviewed them, we're doing all the background information on them, so they're ready to go when an assignment comes live.
Do you want to tell us the website?
I do. If you can just bear with me, since it's new, I want to pull it up and make sure I give you the right address.
Is that okay, Michael?
Yeah, Maureen, go right ahead.
Okay.
Thank you. It's www.boydeninterim.com/US/.
You mean forward slash, right?
Okay.
Leaning towards your right shoulder when you're looking.
Correct.
At it.
See, Michael, I'm not the only one.
Yes,
so for
not.
Us old farts who have some
yeah.
a few breaths left.
Right. Tina's not. She said she's a dinosaur. She's been in the business 3 years. Come
three
on.
Years, yeah.
But the reason I'm interested now is her position, Shannon and Fred, please feel free, but
yeah.
she sounds like a very different kind of recruiter to me because she's working with people who are not really in the workforce, so she's not doing the same kind of sourcing as us. And I don't know how she finds clients either. If they're the VCs, and it sounds like you sort of partner with people more than look for clients on the one side and then go hunting for people on the other. You're more involved in like qualification and selection. Am I right about that?
Right. And this year has really been a focus year in developing our candidate database, and that's why there hasn't been so much business development on my part. But this year's almost over, so that's all going to change.
And what were you doing before 4 years ago, before you were a recruiter?
Well, actually, I came over to the interim side a year ago, and I was on the retained side for a year and a half.
Okay,
so
before you were a recruiter. Before you were in the retained side, what were you doing?
I was in sales.
Oh, you were in sales. What kind of sales?
I worked for a national reference laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
So any type of bodily fluid that needed tested, we would do testing on it.
Uh-huh.
And prior to that, I worked for a medical manufacturer.
Now, why did they hire you as a recruiter with that background?
Very good question.
Because she raised her hand.
Well, I didn't. Actually, someone raised it for me.
Okay.
And they just thought it would be a nice fit. We had someone that specialized in healthcare coming on board from a business development side, so we came on in tandem. They needed someone who understood healthcare that could sell, because what is recruiting? You're selling all day long.
You're selling the jobs to the candidates. Is that what
right,
you're saying?
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, why don't you try it? I said, okay. And I came on board, and within probably 2 weeks, I thought there couldn't have been a job that was better suited to my strengths.
And why is that?
Because I love to talk to people. I know a little bit about a lot of things, and I've been successful at it.
Okay, so let me ask you, though, your sales skills, is it really true that you put them to use now selling primarily jobs to candidates, or were you working primarily on the business side until recently, business development?
I was on the candidate development side.
Okay, so you're really good at presenting a position to a candidate. Is that what you're telling me?
Right.
Okay. Fred, Shannon, any interest in talking to Tina before her time is up?
Actually, I wanted to get your contact information, Tina, because I ducked off for a second. I actually have a candidate that's looking for that kind of situation. And
well, you know, I don't know. Do you want to give your email address on air, or do you want to do it behind the scenes?
I can do it on air. That's fine.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, it's T Winner. It's T like Tango, W-I-N-N-E-R.
Okay.
At Boyden, BOYDEN.com.
All right. I'll email you, and then we can talk.
Great.
Offline.
There's a commission involved here, just so you know.
Okay. Okay. I have to owe you a song?
Yeah, actually, if you come on, you'll have to sing a song. Actually,
Michael, do you think selling is selling the job or selling yourself?
You know what? That's a really good question. I'll just mention something, and Tina might want to comment. I have a candidate who, a recruit of mine, and Shannon just dropped off again. I don't know if it was an accident or not. At any rate, he stays in touch with me. He asks me questions. Sometimes he'll even ask David Perry questions. And David's been nice enough. David from Guerrilla Marketing for Job Hunters. He's been giving him free advice, which I consider very valuable. And he's got back to me sometimes with about recruiters he's had to deal with. They really pressure him into taking a position if he gets an offer, whether it's really suitable for him or not. I don't call that good sales. I would really say what you, the other option you said is selling yourself as a trusted advisor, but I don't know how many recruiters are oriented that way, since they get paid essentially, even if they're retained, on a commission basis when a person takes a job. Tina, what's your opinion about that?
Boy.
When you sell somebody, do you ever really wrestle with somebody who doesn't want to take a job, and you convince them to change your mind?
I think it's more of even getting them to listen on the front end, that they're not open to hearing about other opportunities. I find that to be the most difficult part.
Yeah,
I think once you get to the point where, you know, we both feel like it's a match, I think that it's details at that point.
Okay, so how do you get them? So you have to do what Maureen then. So you're selling yourself as a credible person to listen to. Is that really your strength?
Absolutely, because then, you know, I'm sure it's that way in any business where you might not feel comfortable because you don't know the person. I mean, they initially called you, don't know you from Adam, and you have to build that credibility very quickly.
Well, Michael, look what Tina just did. She called in 20 minutes ago. You didn't want to let her talk about her stuff, and she was able to talk about her stuff.
Did she, or did you muscle in on her
She
behalf?
Sold herself.
Okay,
I helped a little bit by giving her the platform that you wouldn't.
Yes.
And I appreciate that.
But
yes.
She did. She sold herself, and we became interested in what she had to say very quickly. You became interested very quickly.
You got Fred got to talk about his business. Now Tina on hers. But I want to get an example. We always need examples. Give us some examples, Tina, of when you've had a challenge to get, you know, a candidate to listen to you, and how you've swung that person around.
And how I swung that person around.
Fred, do you want to talk while she's thinking?
Yeah, go ahead. Let me think.
Fred?
I'm with you.
Are you talking, or are you going to just listen?
Fred, do you think you sell the job, or do you sell yourself first?
You know what? I think I
I try to sell a process here of trying to engage a potential candidate who specifically is trying to upgrade their career,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily market a job. So I guess I would have to say that in my approach to that, that potential candidate is myself, trying to sell myself in mm-hmm.
That's the Peter Lefkowitz approach, then. You want to establish a relationship with somebody.
That's correct. That's Peter.
Okay.
I don't think people buy products, Michael. I think they buy people.
I don't agree. I know some people who hated my guts, but they sure took the job. I mean, sometimes, if it's the right job, they'll go there and never answer my calls again. I get paid at the end, right? But they just hate me. I don't know why. Tina, are you ready? Speaking of hate.
I can tell you, Michael.
Oh, my goodness.
Tina, are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay,
and I think the example that I want to talk about is I worked on a VP of strategic sourcing, and it was a company that had a bad reputation for churning.
Was that a purchasing position or a recruiting position? Purchasing.
Okay. Supply chain related.
Tough space. Go ahead.
Okay. And they wanted someone from a consumer products company, so found someone highly credentialed and just a great guy. But here wanted to bring him across country to a company that was known for churning and burning. And right in the middle of the process, they merged with another multi-billion dollar company. And there was a lot of hand-holding during that process. And
for why? I mean, give us some details. Come on.
Okay. I don't want
to
say the name of the corporation.
You don't have
but
to tell us that. But, I mean, like, what was the objections of the person? What did that guy say to you?
He freaked out with the merger.
You can come back another day. I've been sideswiped. I was doing some work with a big retailer here in Canada. And while I had the candidate in there for interviews, front page of the paper, they might be sold. He blew himself off. He didn't want to proceed. So are you saying you had the same issue?
Same issue.
Okay.
I mean, this guy was comfortable. He was living in Northern California. Why on earth would you want to come to Pittsburgh?
Now, how did you get him or her? Don't say Pittsburgh. I'll bleep that for you later.
Okay.
So how did you get that person to move?
Continued hand-holding and pointing, not letting it go, pointing out all the positives.
Was there a lot more money?
It was a significant bump.
Mm-hmm.
It was a significant bump.
In addition to a lower cost of living.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, he sold his house for like $1 million in Northern California.
And bought the same for $250,000.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And had a unbelievable house that he bought here in a very affluent neighborhood. So it was I kept pushing the quality of life issue was one of the selling points.
Uh-huh. And you believe that was a valid point.
Quality of financial life.
Exactly. And plus it was a young couple, and I knew that, their goals weren't to stay in corporate America forever, and this was going to give them some opportunities that I didn't see that they would have if they stayed in Northern California.
The show's almost over. I'm going to ask you the final question. Now, you didn't really believe, I guess you can't say this, but here's the question that comes to mind. Are there any circumstances in which you would have stopped encouraging that person to make a move? You don't have to answer. That's not a fair question to ask in public. But that's the question. I believe almost never a recruiter would never encourage a person not to move, whether he or she really believed it was good for that person or not. Now, usually the moves are really good. Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking to those guys. But I think most recruiters will try to muscle somebody into making the move. And really, whether it's good for the candidate is kind of secondary. I might be wrong. Maybe I'm too negative, but that's my thought. That's my Jerry Springer thought for the day. Now, Maureen, what's your parting thought? You've only got
You're
a
so
few
negative,
seconds.
You are too
You've
negative,
only got
Michael.
A few seconds.
You're
what's
too
your
negative.
Parting
that's
thought?
My thought for the day.
Okay.
Lighten up.
Fred, what's your parting thought? You hate working with your son? Don't work for your kids? Is that it?
Actually, I love it. I just haven't quite figured out LinkedIn, and I really appreciate the discussion about that. it's been a mystery to me why the and I do belong to it, by the way. But I am mystified by if it's networking. If it's networking, it ought to be networking. I mean, I'm a pretty superficial guy, and I guess I haven't quite dug down into the nuances yet.
I'm superficial too. Congratulations, Tina. I might have given you a chance to talk anyway, but what's your parting words for us?
My parting words are, Michael, try and spend about 5 minutes not being cynical and be grateful for one thing.
What's that?
I don't know. You have to pick that.
Well, I
what
know.
What are you grateful for, Michael?
I live in Canada.
Okay.
The greatest country.
Oh, no wonder. Okay, you're a Canuck.
Thank you, everybody. Maureen, thank you for bringing Shelly. What a surprise.
Sure,
see you next
okay.
week.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Not turkey again.